Chapter 8, Ida laughed. Robbie A felt a pretty pupper of excitement gyan upstairs at his granny's. With it being sick in a muggle house, there were aye plenty of places to explore, and every time he was there, he saw something he wasn't seen afore. He was only been at the laugh 20 times, and never on his own. He came to the top of the first flight of stairs, and by the window had looked onto the garden. The shade was a beauty with a new coat of paint. The cat he was seen afore came smooting up the door of the shade, likely been in for a pusk boot to see what was been going on. When he went to the landing at the top of the next stair, there were four doors. His granny's room, the front room, the back room, and across a narrow passage, the bathroom. With a fine day, his granny had the windows open to air the rooms. He felt a pretty purr of wind upon his face. He smeagered to himself as he minded about him and Kirsty when they were pretty biding over e night to the back room, and he was made a that fair telling her ghost stories that she couldna sleep. But then, them baith getting a gluff compared to a bird's nest fell down the lum and landed up at the Herdstein. They were baith gin out a yelk. It was that loud that grandmother was risen and come through to see what was happened to them. He stepped into the room now and had a pretty scoit about to remind them. The room was hardly ever used, and it had a kind of story smell. The kist of drawers was full of old photos and gear for years back. Some of his mother's stuff, for when she was pretty, was still there, and a lot of clays hung in the wardrobe, likely never to be worn again. He came back out and crossed the landing into the passage between the front room and the bathroom. Hiding away the passage, there was a pretty wooden door, painted the same colour as the walls. It was brawly narrow and low, and had nae handle, just a bit of string coming through a hole and tied to a pin. As he hauled the string, he heard the snick lifting up at the tither side. He gave the door a pretty shiv, and it opened the corn. It was catching along the bottom, so he gave it a dunt with his foot. It snirked and cleared, opening into blackness. He stepped through. Right away, he could feel it colder, the niff kind of damp and fusty. It was that and smash there that, with the door fully open, that it was snug for next the bottom step. 2 steps up, the stair turned 90 degrees and carried on up. It was brawly steep as well, and no muckle wider as himself. When he was pretty, he ate out the trows bade up with a laugh, and couldn't have gone near it for fear, although he was fine if he was with his grandfather. But it didn't bother him now. He reckoned to hunt the door and find the light switch. It was in the old round blackings. He was blithe to see that when he snuck at the dawn, the light was come on in the laft. He could just scream the tap of the stair and the trusses of the roof above it. There were moosewubs and stoor awai, and the stairs snirked as he climbed up them in at a time. It was that narrow that the shutters were scraping off of the sides as he could, and he wondered for himself what the point of the pretty stair was, for you could get nothing on his size up it. When into the tap step, he stood his length as his een adjusted to the glower for the 2 bare bulbs that was hanging for the roof. Most of the laft was solid enough to stand upon, but there were still bits here and there that he thought wouldna hold his weight, so he took care where he set his foot. They weren't as muckle proil here now as ince they were been, for a log what was been cleared out after his grandfather died. But they were still amid the boxes and cases, some of them lying open with peppers and clay spilling out of them. In each corner there were an old chair with 3 legs and a clock with a glass face broken, all covered in stour. Robbie could see the hands pointing at 6:20 and wondered full lang it was been for they turn. For a' that he was come up to Finarchy's old kirst, he couldna resist having a good look around him. For he licked purling with old bits and pieces of gear. It was a' interesting. Furniture, clays, jewels, and a' manner other things, and somewhat he had nae idea what it was. After 20 minutes, he made his way into the far end of the loft and saw, in a corner, a muckle wooden kirst sitting upon the floor. He felt his heart gae a pretty jump. He kent that this must be the wind. It was fairly solid and made of the dark hard wood with twa mokkel eieren klerps dat kan doen oude front. Je kunt just maken uit drie letters. E, R, H. Skrat het into de tabwoord. Dat man bij Archibald something hunter hij tocht. Als hij haalt de twa klerps vrije der pins en krak het open de lid. Er was meer weegte de lid dan hij lappend, maar hij laft het op en lut het hang back over. Dan hij de squant inside. Het was een diep kist. Zij noem ook licht wijn in het. Shut de lid en weer, but was stonk, shift de kist over de vloer till het was nearly under de bulb, then opened het op again. He was kind of vexed with full little was in it. He was loving it to be full of fascinating things, even although his granny said they weren't ook interested in it. He started wailing through the bits and pieces anyway. The first thing he took out was a heavy last for minding shun. He kent dat recht waar bij de shipwood, like a pretty iron fat. He set it down up by the floor and keep it on hauling things out. There were a leather bag, a doorway of fleet of very little word hooks nearly roosted away up in it, a open light box with nothing in it, and 20 other odds and ends. As he was hawking through it, Robbie couldn't help but think that there might be something in this kist that was linked to what was going on between Archie and the laird, that years ago. And that meant had to be linked to what they were seeing the twa men doing up at the ha. Afore lang he was gotten the kist nearly emptied. Near the bottom he reckoned out a piece of bony carved wood, and as he lifted it out, he could see lying on under it something rolled up in a bit of old oilskin cloth. His head gave a muddle again, and he quickly packed the wood by the floor and yogged ahead of the package. It felt heavy. As he lifted it out, he could feel his hands shaking and his lips sweaty. This must be it, he said out loud. He could feel the excitement bigging up as he set him down by the floor and studied it. It was like a parcel about the size of a dinner plate, whipped up with twine. But the twine was that little worth had cindered as he tried to get the knot undone. He pulled back the twa files off of the tap, in left, in right. He looked out a breath and pulled the rest out clear. His heart sank recht away. There afore him, what was being covered and made fast like it was the crown jewels, was the lid of an old stove, twa horseshoes and a hinge for a grind. To say it he was done upon it didn't come close to what Robbie felt at that moment. He was sure that something in the kist would be a clue to what was going on up at the ha, so he was nae farther ahead with the puzzle. He set him up with the floor a minute, looking at the gear lying about his feet and decided to put it back. If there were nothing here, then there were no point wasting time. Now that his work was done, he would ging up to George's and they might even have time to cycle back up to the ha to see what was happening. He kent deep down, he was really just a stab in the dark, thinking that there would be any clues the kist. He hunkered down as he tied up the stove lid, horseshoes and the muckle cast iron hinge as best he could. As he heisted it over the edge of the kist, had a fell apart and rumbled down to the bottom. He looked at the sock and get it tied up again, but something made him stop for a minute. He lifted up the stove lid, then slipped it back down up at the bottom of the kist. There it was again. He didn't imagine it. The lid made a funny noise when it struck the bottom, not the solid dunt he would lippen for something that yon weighed. He couldn't think what it was, but as he was whopping the oilskin round it, it calmed him right away. The kist didn't seem to be as deep up at the inside as it looked for the outside. He sat back a bit and looked again. It is prettier inside, I'm sure of it, he said, out loud again. He was that convinced. He squatted about him and found a poker lying no far from him. He yogged it and set it up along the outside of the kist with the end up at the floor. He put his forefinger and thumb round the poker where it made the tap edge of the kist. Then, keeping them where they were, moved the poker to the inside of the kist, in the same place. His finger and thumb mark was a good 2 inches abun qua they were bun up at the outside. He measured a second time to make sure and got the same outcome. His een widened as he set the poker down and started looking about the kist. He stuck his arm inside it and banged his knife up at the bottom and got the same hollow sound as when the lid fell upon it. Leaning back upon his hookers, he came to the conclusion that it could only mean one thing. They were a fire's bottom in the kist. Just capering with excitement, he laid the poker down upon the floor with a laugh and put both hands on top of the kist and shifted, tipping it back over so that the light would shine upon the bottom edge to get a better view of it. Looking at the front, he could see where the wooden sides met the bottom. There were a new light shining down that he could see the twa sides and the eye look at the same, the wooden boards coming down and nailed onto the bottom. He could feel underneath that the bottom was fairly flush, so that didn't explain the difference in height between the inside and outside. So, were they a secret compartment? Then he thought he would check the back of the kist, see where his right foot shivin' e-corner and his hands had in the tithering, he got it burled round up at the spot, see as the back was in full view. He closed the lid to make it easier, and propping the kist at the angle, he got his in right down to the bottom edge, rubbing his thumb along it. There was something different about where the back met the bottom compared to the other three sides. At first, Robbie couldn't tell what it was, but then, there it was, staring him in the face. That obvious that he couldn't account for he wasn't seen it right away. There were a pretty narrow strip of wooden beading, nae wider as his finger, nailed along the bottom, running along the hill length of the back of the kist. He blew the store off it. It was definitely a separate piece of wood. With his thumbnail he could feel a gap between the beading and the boards of the back of the kist. He hid to find if there were a hoity hole of this kist. Robbie sat a minute looking at it, then with a jump got to his foot and sprang through the loft to where he was seen a Ruger tools lying. He started hawking through them. He found a pent scraper and a pair of pliers. Kneeling down at the kist, he wedged the scraper into the gap, widening it as he got along. The nails was brawly rusty, so his job was easy. With a bit of twisting and nigging, the beading came away, nae butter, and with a ping, landed upon the floor. He saw a pretty gap, the width of the bead, that disappeared in the darkness. He could see that he was right, the kist had a fast bottom. He was fairly beastering my excitement now, even though it was tricky to see. He couldn't really see anything in this hoity hole. For the second time, his heart fell. Surely this couldn't be another wild goose chase like the oilskin package was being. He got to shift his foot fair under him, and as he moved his head a pretty bit, he saw something in the hole. "Yes," he said, trying to get a better look at it. "There's something there." Picking up the scraper again, he pat him in the gap pretty wise and gave a thing he was seeing a bit of a poke. It moved, and he could tell it was a bit of pepper. He couldn't get his fingers at the gap, and the scraper could only lift it, no yoke it, so he was glad they had to find some way of getting it out. Upon the floor, not far from him, there were a muckle rusty nail. So with that and the scraper both at the gap, he managed to nip the edge of the bit of pepper and haul it slowly out, being careful not to slip it nor tear it. He could see it looked awful old and brown with the edges kind of tuddery, same as a moose was being shown upon it. He got it hauled out in York to get a grip of it with his fingers, and awful pity wise pulled it clear of its hoity hole and held it in his hands. It was about the size of an ordinary sheet of paper, but thicker and heavier. It was a pretty bit broccoli, so he set it down carefully upon the lid of the kist. He leaned over to get a right look at it. It was only then he realised how muckle he was shaking. Robbie could make out some writing upon it, or at least that's what it looked like, but it was great swirly letters, no like what he was wont with reading. With it being brawly faded and with a poor light, he couldn't make out what it said, but felt sure it had to be something important. Why either was this one piece of paper? Why would it be hiddled away? Had hate to be linked to the story his granny was telling him. Robbie glindered at it. He can't, he would hate to find mair light. The front room, that would be perfect. He carried it gingerly to the top of the loft stair, then one at a time, down he could. He took care not to let the paper fall, for he dreaded that if it fell, it would ging and scum, and he would never ken what was upon it. Again the stairs snirked as he stood upon them. When he went to the foot, he found himself blinking with a sudden bright light, for he was gotten wont with a mirk had laughed. He scuttled through to the front room, set him down upon the stool, and laid the piece of paper upon the dresser. Now he could get a better look at it. It was mere broccoli is what he first thought. Ah, afraid with bits of ages missing. Ah, the same colour as if someone was landed a cup of coffee over it. But it was the writing upon it that he was looking at now. Although it was faded, you could make out Uta Corn better. It was handwritten with a great muckle letter at the start of every line, surely done with a quill or something. It minded him of what it was like when he tried using a ma's pain idea of the school. It was written in Shetland and looked like a poem, just 12 lines about the same length. He gave over every word 20 times and then started to make sense of it and write the whole thing from start to finish. For wha should find us, I dare you go and seek out the intrepid's undomious cargo, for it stowed the war safe and under the laird's nose, atween his great ha and qua the do goes. For the placidy watches his own fishing fleet, faith of on he kent what was under his feet. Sam left him a good it to say where it's at, now he canna evict twas and say I'm at the fair. If he gangs in his cellar he'll find it in there, and should he never look, heath, I didna care. Say for sake of the main it was lost half of this ship. Gang you and seek it, he'll be a bountiful trap. Archibald R. Hunter, November 1863. Robbie stared at the words about the piece of paper. He read it all again, trying to make sense of what it said. His head was muddling what he kent that man be linked to. At first he thought it was just some old poem or maybe something been copied from another book. But as he read the words intrepid and about the laird and his ha, the doubt was taken away and his mind was drawn with all the possibilities of what that might mean. Could this be the clue they needed? It might explain what the men at the ha was up to and what it was they were seeking. And he was found it entirely by chance. He knew he was in a right steer. He paired to him wanted to bide and read about the paper over and over till it all made sense. The tither paired to him wanted to jump up at the bike, he'd straight to the ha and try and piece it together for there. He was nearly sure that whatever it was, the main was on to it too. He didn't have muckle time to play with. He was getting in sick of cat-headed about what to do next when he was aware of something coming into the house downstairs and his granny speaking. He listened to the reply. It was George. Robbie stood his length, packed about the paper in the top drawer of the dresser and made off down the stair. He was able to tell George Granny's story about what was happened to Archie Hunter and what he was just found in the kist that laughed. He nearly snapped his ankle as he raced down the stair two at a time. At that point, he had to yock the banister to stop himself again, heady crap. George heard the bummelin' come through over the kitchen and met Robbie as he looped the hitmost 20 steps onto the floor. Ha-ha! George gaffed. Did you think I was thy mither come to see if you'd done all thy chores? I canna believe you gotten sick of doing for being late to stream. His great beaming face shed he was loving every minute of it. George, Robbie said, listen, I hae something amazing to tell thee I'm fun out. He was pecking, no see muckle for running down the stair, but for his amazing discovery. George was going to carry on making a fool of him, but could see with the pan fry Robbie was in that he was being serious. Okay, he said, what's too fun? Robbie looked at him, then up the stair, thinking he didn't want his granny to hear about it. No yet, though, anyway. Come on, I'll tell you outside. He made for the kitchen, where his granny was sitting. No, Robbie, here's George come to see thee. What's you twa going to get up to this afternoon, then? She asked. Oh, I dunna ken, granny, Robbie said, stopping by the door to shad he was heading outside. But he was thinking on his feet. We're just going out to tidy up the brushes and paint gear. We'll be back in a minute. Come do, George. They ran outside, bounding up the 3 steps to the garden, and in seconds were up at the shed. What is it, Robbie? Asked George, on a amp to hear. What's the fun? Does not just want me to clean up thy paint brushes, Stu? Shh, no, I'm no, Robbie told him. Come on, in the shed. He opened the door and they stood in it by the floor, the old murkin' smell now mixing with a whiff of new paint. George would have normally loving some kind of practical joke for Robbie, like a muggle speeder to fall in his face. This time, though, he can't be the why Robbie was acting, that there was something interesting to hear. Robbie hunched himself up by the workbench. Du kens, with the man in the van and the car and them looking for something. And we don't know what it is, Robbie blurted out. Well, yeah, of course, I was there too, fool, George answered, still not twigging what Robbie was on about. Well, Granny tell me, Robbie couldn't get said what he wanted, for he just didn't ken where to start. There were that muckle happened in the last hour, and he was still trying to piece it all together in his own mind afore he could speak about it. Come on, sprout it out, said George. What is this fun out? So Robbie started recounting the intrepid story that his granny was telling. The fan out between his old relation, Archie Hunter, and the laird, the mystery of what it was that he was found that the laird wanted, and for laid in some way to Archie's death. George never said a word as Robbie's story unfolded, either as the occasion, gee whiz, or that's amazing. But he listened to everything Robbie said, his ain getting bigger as the story ah came out. When he was done, Robbie jumped down off of the bench and they stood for a pretty minute before George spoke. Do you think, Robbie, he said slowly, that the poem on yon bit of paper will lead to us to cut Archie Fan and hide the wall? Well, that's what I'm thinking, Robbie answered, but it's all written in a kind of rhyme and I'm no had time to work out what it means. George made for the door. Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go and look at it. They came down the garden and in through the kitchen, where Robbie told his granny he was going to show George the laugh. Robbie led the way up the stair and into the front room. I thought you said it was the laugh, George said, a pretty bit, I'm still no sure that Robbie wasn't just made it all up. It was a laugh, but I hate to take it down here to get a mere light upon it, Robbie countered. He opened the top drawer and set the paper upon the dresser. George screamed over it, staring at it for a minute before turning to Robbie with a puzzled look upon his face. I can't make out what it says, he admitted. I can see the odd word like intrepid. That's the name of the boat that could have ground, isn't it? And I can make out ha and laird, but what does the rest of it say? Robbie got over it, e line at the time, reading it out loud. Ah, I see it now, said George. Yeah, I can read it now that you can hear it, but what does it mean? I'm no sure, but I think we should tack it up to mine and show Kirsty too, since she's in on it as well, George. I don't think we have muckle time to lose, for if this does lead to cut your mind at the ha was after, they say they only had a couple of days left, we had to find it first. That's fairly right, Robbie. Okay, we need to find some way of getting this to worse in e piece, Robbie said, looking at full poor amours the paper was and thinking it was the fast cindery if they took it up with a bike as it was. Hey, he said to George as he spied a cardboard tube, this would do for the nothing in it. I just hope it won't have broke the paper even more, George said as Robbie carefully took the old sheet of paper and rolled it up, taking his time. Then with George hiding the tube, he slowly faded in. They both breathed with relief. That's it, Robbie said, hiding the tube. Let's get underway.